So this is Super Tathis for Bamidbar. We'll start with a couple of stories. A story about the stipler, where there was somebody who, it was an avreich. He had a kid that was, they were having a lot of midos troubles, and they were trying to figure out what to do. So he asked the stipler, hey, what should I do? He said, okay, what are the problems? We'll talk about it. They decided that they were going to learn Sefer Orchos Tzaddikim. He said, learn it with your kid. And he went to go learn it with his kid, and it seemed like the kid was just getting worse and worse and worse. So he went back to the stipler, and he said, Rebbe, I really appreciate everything, but this seems to have gone in the opposite direction. This is, okay, so what are you doing? What are you doing? He said, well, I mean, I tried to coax him a little bit, but, you know, at the end of the day, he didn't want to. So I said, you know, the stipler said you had to, so, you know, you got to sit down and learn. He said, no, that's not the way to do it. What you have to do is say, look, I've got this beautiful sefer. It's really exciting. I really want to put some time into this, but I just don't have a chavrusa. Do you think maybe you'd be interested? Like, you basically have to get them excited about what they were doing, and then hopefully, you know, they'll be interested in, you know, in participating. But you can't, I mean, you're going to completely ruin the whole thing if you say you have to. So I remember Rav Avital, Zecher Tzadik Levracha, I believe one of his children said, he never forced us to learn with him. Never, ever forced us to learn with him. So, I mean, you can encourage, you can do whatever, but, like, the idea is we want to teach our children the idea that learning is a chiyuv, but at the same time, we want them to know and see our excitement when we're doing this. So that needs to be balanced. There's a story about Reb Chaim Brisker that obviously he was well known for his creative learning and chumras. And somebody took him to task one day and said, you know, Reb Chaim, you're such a lamda and you come up with such extraordinary chumras, but I never really hear much about your kulas. Can you tell me a little bit about your kulas? And Reb Chaim Brisker took a moment and then responded. He said, look, it's true. I have a great kula just for you. And the kula is the Shulchan Aruch Paskins that, you know, when you're Mavir Sidra and you learn Shnai Mikra V'Echad Targum, you do Mikra and you do Kort Targum, and a Yorei Shamayim should learn Rashi as well. I actually have a kula that even not a Yorei Shamayim can learn Rashi with the Shnai Mikra. So that was a nice little zinger and a response. So I like that very much. A story about Rav Chanan Wasserman that I saw. Yeshivas Baranovich that he headed was living the life of Paspa Melach. And while it was living the life of Paspa Melach, the money was running low and the Paspa Melach was running low too. So what happened was it became extraordinarily evident that to keep the lights on, Rav Elchanan was going to have to go do fundraising. And although he wasn't such a fan of going to go visit London, he knew it was time to go to London to go raise some money. So he went to a Gvirsha family that was Mechabig Lom De Torah, and he went there and he told them, okay, look, we're going to try to, you know, we're trying to raise some money to keep the lights on the Brunnervich Yeshiva. So the Gvir says to him, well, how much do you need? He said his amount. The Gvir immediately hands it over to him, said, here, we'd love to participate. He gives him the money. This is like the fundraising dream. And unfortunately, what happens is, it sounds kind of gruff, but Rav Elchanan took the money and he basically made a beeline for the door. And not only did he make a beeline for the door, but he made a beeline down the street and beeline down all the way, you know, basically back to Baranovich without looking back. And the Gvir's like chasing him out. Hey, what happened? I thought we were going to, like, you know, like, I was enjoying my company, like the whole thing. And he said, look, I mean, my job is the student of the yeshiva are my, they're like my children. So if they're like my children, I my responsibility is like a father of children. I have to get back them. So thank you very much. And I'm on my way. Last one is David HaMelech and Achitofel. This really dovetails off of the Mishnah in Kenyan Torah that many will be learning this Shabbos, where it says that David learned from Achitofel only such little Torah, and he still was mechaber and we call alufo miyudo. So if he did that, then obviously we need to as well. The wild part of this story is the background that's brought down in Gemara Chagiga. You see it a little bit in a Gemara Sukkah, and I am focusing on a Yalkut Shimoni that I sent you, is that the background for the story is, first thing, Achitofel was an opponent of David HaMelech. So this wasn't like a friendly person who just, you know, taught him a little bit, but he was basically an opponent siding up with Avshalom. But not only that, David HaMelech, when he was basically laying the groundwork for the Shitin, for the Beis HaMikdash, although he couldn't build it himself, he unplugged the Tahom, for lack of a better term, and all of a sudden the world starts flooding. And it was threatening to unflood it was basically threatening to bring another Mabul. So David HaMelech said, well, what can I do? One of the things that was done was saying the 15 Shir HaMalos that brought the water down. And that's the whole Azayamayim Shetafunu Amayim Azeidonim that's talking about. But also the other thing was he came up with an idea that if he wrote Shem Hashem on a piece of chaspa, then he would be able to plug it back up again. But he had a question whether or not he could do that. And he basically screamed out, does anybody know the answer to this halacha? You know, and nobody answered. So David, hoping to evoke more, he said, anybody who knows the answer to this shaila should, if they don't tell me, they should basically choke and die. So it's, you know, one step short of putting him in chayrim. And all of a sudden, Achitofel speaks up. He says, I think you can do it because you can erase Hashem's name just to save, you know, just to save a husband and a wife. So you should be able to do this to save the whole world. It's like a threshold deontology type of question. So he said back to him, okay, fine. So if you look at the story, it's not only that David HaMelech only learned a little bit. This is one of the things that the Rashash points to. It's not only that David HaMelech only learned like very little from him. It's not only that he's a foe, but he had to basically threaten that, that he was cursing him if he didn't tell him to squeeze that Torah out of him. And it just shows how important it is to be mechaved anybody who teaches you anything. So those are the stories. Divrei Torah, Nadavan Aviyu. So Nadavan Aviyu, it says that they died, but one of the extra pieces of information that's brought up in this week's Sidra is Uvonim Lo Hayu Lahem. They didn't have children. Okay, that's great. So why is it that it gives us that extra information? Ksav Sofer says the reason why it gives us the extra information is not because it happened to be that they died, without heirs. It's saying that they had a Shita, and their Shita was that their shita was maybe we shouldn't have children, meaning we're here in a very holy position, and maybe the idea is to be as separate from this world as humanly possible. And this was an idea that was put forth by nobody else than Paro. When Paro says, you can send the Kohanim out to go serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu, but like, why else would you need anybody else? And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, Babaneinu, Vanoseinu, everybody's coming, right? Vanareinu, Zakeinenu, Neilech, we're all going together, because the idea is that Kedusha is something that's supposed to be done at its highest level in integration, and not separation. Precious is lower than Kedusha in the ladder of Rabbi Pinchas ben Yair, and there's a lot more for us to do than just hide from all of the tools that Kadosh Baruch Hu gave us in this world. Next is a kasha that people have.
Sorry,
it's a Ksav Sofer. And it was attached to the email. So the next one is Rashi says that Aaron's kids are called Moshe's kids because Moshe taught them Torah. So there's a difference between biological parenting and spiritual parenting, and both of which are parenting. So the question that many Meforshim ask is, if that's true, Moshe Rabbeinu is the Rabban Shal Yisrael, and the Rabban Shal Yisrael taught all of Klal Yisrael. And if he taught all of Klal Yisrael, then Lich'ura, we should call all of Klal Yisrael as children. So why is this distinction reserved specifically for Aaron's children, at least taught in such a manner? So a few answers that I found. One is the Maharal, is one was an obligation and one was voluntary. The Netziv said that Aaron's kids were his Talmidim Mufhakim, so that was really kind of the exemplar, as it were. The Devek Tov, in a similar vein, says that one, he taught everything he knew, that's the sons, and the other one is that he just taught Halach LaMaisa. And the other one is per this Gemara in Erevin, that Moshe Rabbeinu taught Aaron's sons four times, many times, as if they were his own sons. That's a Maskil LaDavid. There's more, but that's a good one, and it's also a good thinking question to pose to your Shabbos tables, is why, and how to expand that. Last thing is one on Pirkei Avos. Many of us will be learning Perek Kinyan Torah this Shabbos. as the weeks between Pesach and Shavuos will conclude, I guess, the study of Pirkei Avos for many. So in that is the extremely enigmatic and provocative story of Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma, who goes he goes out and he's met by a person. He says, I'm going to offer you a great shteller. We'll pay you all the money. And he says, no, I don't want to leave a makom Torah. So there are basically two mahalchim in this story. And I want to expose, I guess, a question that comes out, you know, from this story and a little bit of thought. The first is the Medrash Shmuel and Rav Chaim Volozhiner and many others actually say that this was the way that the Yetzer Hara works, meaning this person wrongly chose to leave the Beis Medrash. And look what happens if you leave the Beis Medrash just for a second, the Yetzer Hara will come. The Medrash Shmuel actually takes it further and he says this was none other than Samael, meaning this is like, it's like the Sitra Achra is coming to get you as soon as you leave the Beis Medrash. But on the other hand, if you look, I sent you the Lechem Shemayim, which is Rav Yaakov Emden, says, have you guys ever heard of Kiruv? Right? Meaning, if people stayed completely insulated, nobody's going to ever learn unless they enter the Beis Medrash. And Chochmas Bechutz Tarona, Birchovos Titen Kola, that's really wonderful. But it doesn't always happen that way. And like, if you go out and you teach and you're tofeach lahadfiach, that's a wonderful thing. So he vociferously disagrees with that pshat and says it must be that Rabbi Yossi ben Kisma saw something else about that place that he was going to and felt that he would be more influenced by them than they would be influenced by him. So he cheshbened it out and he said, this is not for me. But it couldn't be that, you know, you should never leave the Beis Medrash. I will give some siyua to the Lechem Shemayim's approach, because when it says tzu'u ur'u earlier in the prakim of Pirkei Avos, go out and see what is the right way for a person to live their life. There, it's either Rav Chaim Volozhiner or his father of Itzla says why it says tzu'u ur'u is because this sort of quote-unquote conversation doesn't belong in the Beis Medrash. Tzu'u ur'u means go out of the Beis Medrash and have this conversation. So I know that in Volozhin they conceded that there would be things that need to happen outside of the Beis Medrash. It shouldn't be too much of a chiddush. But the question that comes out of this is when, what, where, and how is appropriate, and how does somebody get that? Last question, and this is the thinking question that I have for everybody, is there is a minhag Yisrael to learn the Memches Kinyani Torah, the 48 methods through which people acquire Torah during the days, the 49 days in between in between the beginning of Pesach and Shavuos, in a preparatory phase for Matan Torah. The issue is I'm not an accountant, but there's a counting problem. There are 48 Kinyani Torah and there are 49 days. So what do we do with number 49? And that's the question that you put to people. Obviously, people have gone to very creative places in Drush, but you could see where it plays out on your Shabbos table. Shkoyach.